Hello and welcome to the In The Zone podcast with Mike Ryder
and me, Josh Hughes.
In today's episode, we've invited back our friend Lindsay Claire Hogg, who is a good friend of ours and shares an office with Josh, which is your main reason you're here. And you're also doing a PhD in tissue donation in minors.
Yes.
So for this episode, we thought we'd talk about something very different to what either of you to do, and we're going to talk about subscriptions and the subscription model for services, which is sort of becoming a big thing at the moment.
Yeah, so we're kind of thinking about Spotify and Netflix, where you subscribe to a service and then you have access to a library full of music or films or
content.
TV. Content, yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. You have access to the library of it rather than traditionally going into a shop and buying a film or an album or whatever and having it, it's yours and that's it forever, or as long as you want to keep it. Whereas, you only have access to the library for as long as you keep paying.
Yeah, or it's available online.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is an interesting thing, really, because it, in a way, it offers a lot of advantages. I think you could say it's probably greener, in the sense of we're not printing all these DVDs. Maybe. I mean, that in itself could be contended by some people, but just generally, I think ease of access.
Ease of access, definitely, yeah.
But then I don't necessarily... I mean, some individuals... I mean, looking at society today... and seeing about accessibility and how many homes have computers, how many homes have internet, and now we are lucky enough to have access to these things, but a lot of individuals can't, whether that's because of price or social issues or even looking at some of the older generations, so looking at your parents and stuff. Yes, they might be able to use a computer, they might be able to do these certain things, but they might not be able to have full access to it. And I think sometimes, I'm not saying it's not accessible, but I think sometimes some people forget about those other individuals within society.
Yeah, I suppose there's a barrier to entry, isn't there?
But then there's a barrier to entry for everything. So an individual might not be able to get to a shop to buy an album, a bit like an individual might not be able to download something.
Exactly.
So I think you'll always have barriers regarding accessibility with anything.
Yeah, but I think probably once you've kind of installed like the Netflix app or something, once you've actually purchased the technology and you've got access to,
I think it is. Yeah.
Generally, they're quite well laid out to make it easy, because they want the interface between you and the service to be really smooth, so that you use it a lot.
Mm. But there are of course problems with these models. And I think also we should probably separate between, because there are two different types of subscription services that are quite good. So we've got the digital side and we've got the physical side. And I think we'll talk about the physical side in a minute, because I've got an interesting example to share with you. But for the digital side, we're all beholden to that company to keep on running and to provide us with the content that we want. Mm. So if Netflix went down tomorrow...
You've got Amazon Prime.
You've got Amazon Prime. But the idea being that if the internet went down tomorrow, suddenly we've got no entertainment because you don't own any of your DVDs.
Yeah.
And that in itself could be seen as an issue, especially if you, inverted commas, paid for your content.
I suppose it depends how you view it, doesn't it? Do you think you've paid for your? Do you think you've paid for the content, or do you think you've paid for access to the content?
Mm. And that's the thing, because I think it's weird, because if you look at CDs and things like that when you buy them, even they say technically you don't. Do you actually own the music that's on your CD, or is it just you own the right to listen to it? So I'm not quite sure where we stand legally on that.
I think it's that you own that physical copy, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, it's to do with tangible and intangible property rights. So your intellectual. Sorry, I'm going all law now.
No, it's
your intellectual property rights and your tangible property rights.
Because there was a thing a while back, wasn't there, with CDs where, because you're not technically supposed to copy them.
Yeah.
Like, because people used to make mixtapes. I mean,
yeah.
And then obviously when CD writers came out, people would start burning CDs and like copying them and then giving them to their mates. And now obviously you can rip stuff to your computer. So I could rip a CD, give it to you. Obviously, that's breaking the law, technically speaking, I guess.
I think we don't like the same music either.
But we don't.
So I think nowadays it's depending on whether you've still got a CD player.
Well, that even if... Yeah, because, I mean, you get devices now that don't even come with disk drives.
Yeah.
A lot of computers don't even come with disk drives.
Yeah, my laptop doesn't.
Yeah.
No. But there is then the question of ownership and, like, well, what you're allowed to do with a thing that you own.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I think because a lot of these subscription services allow you to download stuff, download content, but within the app.
So or for a certain period of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite often you get, certainly like through the library here at Lancaster Uni, you can sort of e-loan a book, basically. There's a digital copy of a book, of an e-book, for, you know, I think basically the file dies on your computer after a week or something
But so, it's so diverse, though, that service, isn't it? I think that's one of the problems for the book version, is that there are so many different ways of accessing the same content.
Yeah.
And with the subscription model as well, you're sort of hamstrung in a way by which service you subscribe to. So one provider will have their service with their film. So if you want to watch one film on one service, one film on another service, because isn't there word of Disney launching a subscription service as well soon?
Yeah, so because Disney have bought Marvel.
And they own Star Wars.
So all of that Marvel and Star Wars content is only going to be on this Disney Plus service.
Yeah, so that'll all disappear off Netflix, which will be a massive...
Yeah. But I think... it's kind of the same problem as we've had with academic subscriptions for quite a while. Because although here at Lancaster we've got a great library that will buy stuff for you all the time if you ask them, if you need it.
And paper versions if you're very, very lucky.
Yeah.
I got them to buy two books for me, paper versions.
Well, you're lucky because they don't like doing that. But that's another story.
Anyway, yeah, that's another story. But I mean, the point that I'm making is that we're really lucky that our library will buy stuff for us, whereas other institutions, some of them won't.
Mm.
You know, if you're the only person who would use that journal subscription or that book or whatever, some libraries wouldn't buy it for you. So, in that sense, kind of the subscription model for academic journals is sort of reflects the problem that the subscription model has for
the general public.
The general public.
Yeah, because we're beholden to whichever packs of journals that the library subscribes to.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, my research is limited by whatever I have access to electronically.
And in the same way that your entertainment is restricted limited to whatever Netflix or Amazon Prime, whatever you want to subscribe to. Yeah.
But there are then benefits, obviously, to this. I mean, we talked about a little bit about the sort of the green, not necessarily having so much stuff in your house or whatever.
I suppose that depends upon whether you think that, how many emissions kind of data centres have.
Yeah, well, there is that. But I mean, they're looking at like Microsoft are now dropping their things in the sea, aren't they, to try and benefit from cooling and stuff.
I think it's also about knowledge as well.
Mm.
So I have only recently become part of this subscription sort of world, as you might want to call it. I've not had Netflix for very long.
But you're now a voracious watcher of everything.
But it's that idea that even though sometimes it's trivial knowledge from films, but it is allowing individuals to have better access to knowledge. And I think this started off with the internet. You know, we have a much better range of access to knowledge in general to the human race than what we did 40 years ago or 50 years ago. And I think that's also helping with subscriptions. So, for example, I might have wanted to watch a certain film, so off I would go down to Blockbuster that doesn't exist anymore. Go and rent the film, take it home, watch it and take it back. Whilst with Netflix, I might go, okay, I want to watch that film, but then they might recommend a number of other things.
Mm.
And then suddenly my knowledge expands. I watch one of those, and then my knowledge expands.
I mean, when you say knowledge, though, I mean, maybe you're talking about your...
Depends how many documentaries you watch, rather than...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's knowledge in a different sense. I mean, obviously we get that...
Your world's expanded.
Yeah, I mean, but also if we go back to the academic journal type that Josh talked about, your knowledge of in that sense, your academic knowledge is also becoming expanding from certain subscriptions as well.
But obviously, Josh, you're subscribing to this university by essentially paying to be here in the first place. So it's not like any average Joe or Jill on the street can go out and have access to these articles. Although this does bring on the old open access debate, which is definitely another topic for another podcast, and is very controversial in academia.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's another story. I was going to mention briefly also about subscription when it comes to software. And I'm not talking just about games and films here. I was thinking about, for example, Windows Microsoft Office and things like that. Mm. So there are advantages to subscriptions. I know some people will not necessarily like paying for these things on a yearly basis, but what you're doing is you're actually paying for the company to keep your software up to date.
Yeah.
And that's actually has potential benefits. In terms of sort of compatibility across people using devices and things, in terms of security as well.
I mean, Mike and I have spoken before about kind of the advantages of Office 365 and that whole suite, and being able to pick up a document on your phone or your tablet after you've finished it on your desktop or your laptop or whatever. And
Big Microsoft fanboy here. Please, Microsoft, send me some free stuff.
But it's the same sort of thing if you're using the Google Office Suite or
yeah, of course,
Dropbox
yeah.
or whatever, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's yeah, having to continually to pay for that is obviously it's a very different model from how it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, you went down to the computer shop and you bought an install disk with the Office Suite on.
Yeah, but there are benefits to, because I mean, there's this, I read a lot of tech articles about Windows 10 particularly.
Yeah.
And this idea that you had all these different people with all these different versions of Windows, and it's very hard to keep them all at the same level and secure.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem now is that you have corporations that are still struggling to keep up. So,
yeah.
But Windows 7 is soon to expire, so Microsoft's going to stop making updates for it. People are aware of this, and they've known it for a long time, but they're not keeping up to date. But once everyone's on Windows 10, they can just roll updates to Windows 10, and everyone will be on the same playing field,
great.
With the exception of corporations, where it's so big. Like,
yeah.
But really, so everyone's got to be on the same level. Problem is, some people are still running on XP, you've got all these things. But the idea is that you bring people up, and then they'll be better for security and better for sort of user experience and all this sort of stuff. But then obviously, it has got downsides as well. Because if going back to the internet, you've got this idea that when you talk about Google and Google Docs, in a way, you are paying a subscription. But your subscription isn't money, your subscription is your data.
Yeah.
And this is something that people forget, or they sort of remember, but they sort of. Because your subscription is the money that's then being fed into Google via the advertising agencies that pay for your data. So actually, you are paying a subscription for Google.
Yeah, but I suppose that's
not money.
That's a very small barrier to entry for a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah,
but a lot of people are quite happy to give up some of that.
And that's why they're so. But they don't realise what that means,
yeah.
And that's the thing. When we talk about consent, and we've talked about consent before, when sort of podcasts about organ donation with Lindsay. People know what giving up a kidney is, sort of. Do they realise what giving up their data actually means?
Yeah,
it's exactly. And ultimately, if you provided that option, so you could say to the individual, I'm not saying this is feasible, but would you provide this data or would you pay this money? I think majority of people, as long as it's not invasive data, would give up the data rather than the money. I'm not saying that's true with everybody, but is that because we don't understand what giving up that data means? Or money, we know what money means, so that book costs £10, we know what that £10 means, but we don't know what the data means, so it's got a different concept, a different value.
And the data is still related to us once we've passed it on. So once you know something about me, you still know about it me in the future, and you can do whatever you like with that information. Once I've given you my £10, it doesn't matter what you do with the £10, I don't care. But that information is still sort of linked to me, whereas the money isn't.
I suppose it depends, doesn't it? I mean, sometimes when I think about my subscription to Spotify, which is £10 a month or whatever, and I think, well, I've had it for a couple of years or something, and that's £240 for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I think, well, did I spend that much on CDs? You know, if I decide not to listen to music on it for a week or something, or I decide to go back and listen to my actual CDs, then I'm kind of wasting that. But if you, I suppose the thing is that if you decided to listen to your old CDs for a month or a week, you probably wouldn't think, oh, I'd better cancel my Spotify. You just leave it. And so in that way, it kind of it's continually taking money away from it, whether or not you use it, much like many people who bought gym memberships and never go.
Yeah, but it's going back to the, would you go back to your CDs? So for example, I can connect my Spotify to my car, and then I can just take my phone with me and put my headphones in, and then I can get it to uni and put it on loudspeaker in the office, which I don't, Josh, by the way, you know this. and then I can, you know, and I can go, Josh could go, oh, you know what's really great? I've heard this band, and I could just look it up on Spotify and download it immediately. Whilst that doesn't happen with CDs, and I think it's the way that society's advanced and technology's advanced that we expect these sorts of things. And I remember going and buying my first single, and you had to change the CD, and those CD players that were portable, and you had to keep them flat, and all the rest of the problems that went with it. And nowadays we don't have these problems, and it's great. I can make a playlist now for whatever.
But most importantly, what was the first single?
Knowles Barkley, Crazy.
Really?
Such a good single.
Showing how young you are, I think.
Yeah, it does show how young you are. But that was the first ever single, and I think I still...
Was it on CD?
Yeah, from HMV, $1.99.
My first single, I'm not going to say what it was, but it was on cassette. So that shows a little age gap between me and Lindsay.
I do remember cassettes, though, but yes, I did have cassettes. But I think it's the way that we expect these sorts of things, and it goes back to, ultimately, you were saying that you subscribe to Netflix and you only have access to what is on those Netflix, but then it's a bit like going down to Blockbuster to buy your to borrow your DVD. You only have what's available in that shop. It's a physical shop rather than an online shop. And I think that's the issue as well.
But then obviously it's having big impacts on the economy in various ways. And I think the decline of the high street is one of the biggest things that's come out of this. I mean, if you look at talking about Blockbuster, people don't rent movies anymore for various reasons. Because if you don't like a film on Netflix, you can just go to another one.
Yeah, but I suppose it depends, because I quite like, or some films that like aren't on Netflix or Amazon Prime or whatever, you can rent them off, say, Google Play.
Yeah.
Or you can rent them off Amazon Prime or whatever for $2.50 or something, and you can watch it as many times as you want within a 48-hour period.
But the price you pay for that, as well as obviously the money you're paying, is the fact that the high street is sort of dwindling.
Yeah.
Places like HMV, Woolworths doesn't exist anymore. That's where I bought my first single from, and my Pick a Mix. When I was but a lad, I used to sell CDs in the Rick Smiths, you know. But I mean, this is what I'm saying. Our price doesn't exist anymore. HMV, you don't know what's happened to it.
Yeah.
So our whole culture is almost changing because of the sort of move towards subscription services.
Yeah.
Sort of data driven. It all comes through sort of the phone lines now, and we don't sort of, and also then we don't interact with each other so much, do we?
Yeah. I mean, there's no. Conversation with the the person behind the desk about, oh, you like this one, what about that?
And then they're not being employed to be...
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you might have had a sales assistant that said, okay, well, you like the CD, well, why don't you go and try that artist, for example? But then you have a manual way, a coding to produce...
An algorithm.
So, exactly, and if you dare watch one child's movie on Netflix, it you then get you recommended everywhere. Peppa Pig for the next 3 weeks, which was my fatal error.
Yeah, I've done that with Christmas present buying as well, because as soon as they know where you're looking...
Exactly, and that's the thing, that yes, I have discovered TV shows and films and things that I would never have found just looking at the browsing the shelves in Blockbuster, but then at the same time, then they're taking that data, and you can tell sometimes a lot about an individual by...
Well, you can tell a lot about an individual.
By what they watch on Netflix.
But not just what they watch on Netflix, what they buy on Amazon.
Yes.
You could pretty much tell what I study and what I like listening to by going on my Amazon account quite easily.
But I think there's also that... the problem of kind of the fragility of the algorithms, because if you buy something off Amazon, you know, it recommends similar things for you to buy, no matter whether it's kind of a thing that you would buy a lot of or you would only buy one of. I remember someone telling me that they, for some reason, they decided to buy a toilet seat off Amazon. I mean, I don't mean some, obviously their toilet seat is broken, but why you choose Amazon rather than a hardware store? But then they kept getting emails, you bought this. What about this other? You know, you only need one toilet seat, and however, you know, you don't need to buy seven at a time. But Amazon was recommending multiple ones for us to buy.
They also do it if you browse as well.
Yeah.
So if you browse for certain things multiple times, you then get. So for example, I've browsed previously about certain books in areas of law that I wanted to know if they existed or whether there were books out there, and whether I borrowed them from the library or bought a copy from Waterstones or wherever, it is a different matter. But then I just keep getting emails of whether I want to buy this book off Amazon.
Yeah.
And that's the issue.
But I think in that way, it's a bit annoying. But then when it comes to, like we said before, you know, you've seen this film, what about this? Or you've got this band, what about this?
Mm.
You know, that's quite good. That's quite useful.
In a way, it's good, yeah.
But is that also allowing an aspect of more films and more TV shows to be produced because they're more out there, so you have more accessibility towards them?
Yeah.
You're more aware of them?
I suppose it depends how you view like the Netflix model. Because Netflix, obviously, have invested millions and millions, or hundreds of millions of dollars in programming. And some of them are quite wacky and a bit off the wall. And I think some people probably view it to think, well, they're just pumping money in and throwing everything at the wall and hoping some of it sticks.
Mm. Yeah.
Or are they actually producing lots of really good stuff, but it just fits in a niche that's only applicable to some people, and so a lot of other people won't like it?
There's two arguments, isn't there? So in a way, you could say, well, they can produce more. They can take more risks because more people are likely to find it, like you say, because people might go into it. But at the same time, you could say, well, maybe they're not, because they know exactly what you might like, that you're going to lose the chance to discover that amazing thing that might actually broaden your horizons.
Yeah.
So in a way, you're almost being funneled towards a certain type of entertainment.
The problem is that if you say you buy a Netflix subscription and you're really into horror films at the time, and then all it recommends is horror films, well, you're not going to have an opportunity to think about thrillers or dramas or anything else.
Rom-coms.
Yeah, because you're not, the algorithm isn't going to throw those things up at you.
Yeah, that's true.
It kind of...
So it opens you up on one hand, but it also limits you on another hand.
Yes, and I suppose there's also a problem where if you have like multiple users on the same account,
yeah,
which is a perennial problem for people who have Netflix accounts, because you know, say you share an account with somebody and you share the same profile, well, the recommendations aren't going to be four person A or four person B; they're going to be somewhere in between. So it kind of exposes the fragility of the algorithm, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, so just to sort of move this on a little bit, do we think subscription models are going to continue? Do you think they're going to become more widely used, and not just in games and entertainment?
Yeah, I think they will. Like, I think you have subscription models to audiobooks now. And
yeah.
I think you'll end up with more subscription models to books online, ebooks and things like that. And I think you will get... I think it is growing. I think it is a growing market with subscriptions, whatever it will be for in the future, but I see subscription models.
Is it because we're lazy, do you think?
I don't know, maybe. I think it's perhaps it's lazy on behalf of the people who can create these models, because it seems like every company that could offer a subscription just is, whether they've actually thought about is this the best thing or not. Because I mean, obviously you've also got other services that kind of the gig economy and things that are available on tap when you want it, and you only pay for it when you want. And so to some degree, kind of the subscription models are like that, because often you subscribe for a month, but it's just a rolling contract, so you could quite easily cancel your subscription at any time and you just run out of the month.
But then it's going back to that gym example, that how many people get gym?
Oh, yeah.
Or when it says the first month is free, but then it continues to roll unless you actively cancel it.
Yeah.
And ultimately, for these subscription models to last, they have to make more money than what they're spending in order to make it economically beneficial for the company. So think about how much you pay for that subscription and how many films or TV shows, whatever you watch, and are you getting value for money, or would it have been better value if you'd gone back to Blockbuster or buying CDs and things like this? And do I watch more TV and more films because I now have Netflix? The answer is probably yes, because if I'm bored, I wouldn't necessarily have gone down to Blockbuster to watch and blah, blah, blah. I would just click on Netflix and go, oh, that's on my list. Why didn't I watch that for a bit? But
I suppose sort of 10 years ago, if you were bored, you'd just flip the TV on and watch whatever was
on it. Exactly. And some people very rarely turn on an actual TV and watch live TV rather than... I know you have these subscription-based things, but you still have like BBC iPlayer and 4OD and stuff, which don't have subscriptions attached to it, but are the same principle behind it. You have a range of shows to...
It's completely changing the way we operate as a society, isn't it? I mean, obviously, our discussion so far has just tended around the sort of the internet sort of based subscriptions. I just want to mention this briefly, because I think that this ties in then with the sort of the physical world as well. Because I heard this on the news recently, a shaving startup called Harry's has recently sold to Schick for $1.37 billion.
Okay.
The concept is, and I the concept is essentially you subscribe to them for however much, £5 a month, and you get your razors through the post.
Yeah.
So you don't have to remember to buy new ones.
Well, it's quite common that, well, it's becoming a new market model for quite a lot of companies. So there's companies that you can buy sort of meat and vegetables from, and they'll deliver it
And I used to work for a company that did way before its time, I think, called Don't Forget Your Toothbrush. When I was a ghostwriter, see our other podcast, they basically send you a new toothbrush every six months because people forget to change it, and actually it's good for people's oral health to remind them to keep brushing their teeth.
Yeah.
Actually, the concept of that is far better than a razor one in a way, because it's actually got some actual health benefits. But this idea, do you think, because has the internet shaped our behaviour and made us more susceptible to doing a subscription model, or is it because we all feel like we've got less time, so we feel like actually... these things are
beneficial. So I was going to say about the time, like, do we have a society, and this is another podcast for another day if you want to do it, but
add to the list.
This idea that it's life stresses and so busy and so many things and so many emails and texts and phone calls and all this, that we're so busy that we don't think about day-to-day things of subscriptions, so whatever that might be, whether that's meat and vegetables because we don't have time to go to the shop to do a shop, or whether it's razors because we don't have time to go to the chemist to buy them, or toothbrush or whatever.
Yeah.
And ultimately, are we going to get into a society where everything's a subscription that comes through your door at a particular time? Will that reduce wastage, or will that increase wastage or things like this?
What does that mean for us? I mean, I just find it quite depressing in a way, because essentially you don't need to leave your house for anything. Like, it'll still get delivered to you. Someone else makes the decision. Oh, you run out of milk. Okay, we'll deliver the milk to you straight away.
Like, well, I suppose it's like those Amazon Prime buttons.
That they've discontinued.
They discontinued, yeah. So like the idea was, say you could have a specific button for like washing powder.
Yeah, and
you
buy the loo roll, you just press a button.
Yeah, next to your washing machine. And once you've run out, you just press this button. And it sends a signal to your phone or to...
Through the Wi-Fi.
And it puts... a box of washing powder.
It's quite an interesting concept. It's just a little button, like sort of as big as your thumb, with a label of that particular brand on it. Obviously, Amazon has a deal with that brand, obviously, to sort of. And then you just stick it in somewhere around your house. You connect it to your router, and you just press it, and it would order.
Wow.
Which I suppose is only is if you're the idea of having it available to you once you've run out or just before you run out is really the idea of the subscription model, isn't it?
Mm.
That you want that product to come in every month.
Mm.
So that you've always got some.
Mm.
But the problem is if the packet lasts 6 weeks and you've got every month you've got one coming in, and suddenly you've got a stockpile.
You've got too many, yeah.
Yeah.
But then it links with the on-demand thing, because obviously when we talk about Netflix, that's more like subscription, but it's also on-demand. So there are two different subscription models we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because what you were saying about this idea of the washing powder and things like that, and if you've always got a button for you to receive a certain type of washing powder, then are you going to try other washing powders? It's a bit like going around Tesco. You can do an online shop, which is fine, but you normally have a certain set of things that you want to buy. Now, I did my Tesco shop yesterday, and yes, I went with a list, and I know what I want to buy, and I know what I like, but at the same time as going round it, you go, I'll try that. Oh, that's a better brand. I prefer that. And with these subscription models, if you just have to order the same things month in, month out, how does it do for other types of
this is the thing that I was thinking about. I suppose gym subscriptions have already become this to some degree.
Mm.
If you don't cancel your subscription, and maybe instead of rolling per month, it becomes rolling per year.
Mm.
You have to wait a year and you have to pay for the full year.
Mm.
And then the prices go up and you've just not bothered to look at it, you've not bothered to think about it. And it could be quite easy for whatever washing powder or another product for the price just to keep going up, but because that's on your subscription, you just keep paying it because you've not actually had an opportunity to look for another product. Mm.
And you might be disinclined to want to look for another product.
Yeah.
And then actually, in a way, you've got less choice than you might have had before.
So then we end up being customers of...
And we're all turned into robots.
Of one company for everything.
Jeff Bezos will rule our world. Yeah. It's quite scary, but I think there's a lot. It leaves us with a lot to think about, doesn't it? And the sort of way society's going.
But it links back to our chat on human enhancement, in terms of that, you know, everything has to be properly regulated.
And how do we regulate that, and for what purpose?
Yeah.
Would be the other questions I think that come out of that.
Because it's all about competition between the different businesses, isn't it? How do you enable that competition to happen? Because one of the purposes of competition is to make sure, you know, the prices are at a certain point. Because ultimately, if there was only one company that produced washing powder and we needed washing powder, then they could charge as much as they wanted. And that's something that's, you know, ultimately we have all these different subscription services. And if we get to a point where we permanently rely on these subscription services, whether it's for entertainment, if there was only one subscription service, then it's the price aspect behind it as well.
And then this links back with... we're just talking about regulation. I'm just thinking about, like, well, with capitalism, essentially, these things come about before the regulation, before we realise we need regulating. And this is the problem we have with social media, is that social media came about and became an issue before we then realised actually we need to regulate it. And before, and now you've got to a point where they're almost too big. They're almost too big to regulate. It's very hard to sort of retrospectively now regulate them to behave in a certain way, because they're so ingrained in our society.
So I suppose that's the recommendation of this podcast, is get out in front of regulating the subscription model.
Yeah, but that's really good. Thank you very much. Thanks, Lindsay.
No problem.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the In The Zone podcast with Mike Ryder and Josh Hughes.
For more podcasts and interesting chat, visit InTheZonePodcast.com.